This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
Als Gründerinnen und Gründer willst du vor allem eins, schnell vorankommen. Egal ob beim Product Market Fit, deinem nächsten Schritt oder deinem ersten großen Enterprise Deal. Doch mit KI, die Entwicklung immer schneller macht, steigen auch die Anforderungen an Sicherheit. Und das früher als je zuvor. Wer Themen wie Security und Compliance richtig angeht, ermöglicht Wachstum. Wer zu lange wartet, bremst es aus. Deshalb setzen viele Startups früh auf Wanta und wachsen sicher weiter. Wanta macht es einfach mit tiefen Integrationen, starker Automatisierung und kontinuierlichem Monitoring, das mithält. Und wenn es ans Audit geht, seien Wochen bereit, nicht erst in Monaten. Jetzt starten auf wanta.com. Als Gründerinnen und Gründer willst du vor allem eins, schnell vorankommen. Egal ob beim Product Market Fit, deinem nächsten Schritt oder deinem ersten großen Enterprise Deal. Doch mit KI, die Entwicklung immer schneller macht, steigen auch die Anforderungen an Sicherheit. Und das früher als je zuvor. Wer Themen wie Security und Compliance richtig angeht, ermöglicht Wachstum. Wer zu lange wartet, bremst es aus. Deshalb setzen viele Startups früh auf Wanta und wachsen sicher weiter. Wanta macht es einfach mit tiefen Integrationen, starker Automatisierung und kontinuierlichem Monitoring, das mithält. Und wenn es ans Audit geht, seien Wochen bereit, nicht erst in Monaten. Jetzt starten auf wanta.com.
Thank you for downloading this podcast from the BBC. And welcome to The Briefing Room with David Aronovich. Labour activists, councillors, an MP, and even a former mayor of London have been suspended for comments which many regard as anti-Jewish. So this week, we ask, why might a left-of-centre, progressive, pro-minority party have a problem with anti-Semitism?
Good evening. In recent weeks, the Labour Party has been convulsed by an unlikely series of accusations. These are that the party, which for decades now has seen itself as the champion of minorities and the downtrodden, has become infected by anti-Semitism, anti-Jewish racism. The claims and the subsequent rebuttals are varied and very confusing. So, step with me, David Aronovich, over the threshold of the briefing room, and let's try to work out exactly what's going on. To begin our journey of clarification on this issue of how a party of the left can contain people who apparently hold bigoted views about a minority, I have with me David Hirsch. David, you're Jewish, you're an academic in London, you're a man of the left yourself, and for a few years now you've been increasingly bothered about what you see as a growing anti-Semitism of the left. Why?
Well, for all my political life, there have been people on the left and people in my political world who have a kind of obsessive hatred of Israel and who pick up on all sorts of connections between Israel and Nazis and apartheid and Jews and all of that stuff. What I'm worried about at this moment is that that kind of visceral hostility and anger with Israel, which spills over, is in the leadership of the Labour Party, is in the leadership of the National Union of Students, is arguably in the leadership of the big unions. So what we used to see on the cranky corners of the Stalinist left, we're now seeing right at the top of the Labour movement.
That's your perception. Not so very long ago, the Labour Party was a largely pro-Zionist, pro-Israel organisation. It had very good relationships with the Israeli Labour Party. Everybody would meet up at conference and so on. What do you think has changed to make the situation you think you see come about?
Yeah. Parts of the left haven't known whether to understand Jews as the kind of symbol of the ultra-oppressed, the powerless people in Auschwitz, or the all too powerful people who run the banks and who run capitalism and who are in charge of us all.
Are you saying that where once, let's say, the mainstream left would have said Israel and Jews are part of the oppressed side of the equation and therefore they're on our side, and it's now turned to whereby they say Israel and the Jews, well, Israel, are now part of the oppressors and therefore have moved to the other side of the balance sheet.
One of the things that happened more recently is a focus on Israel as a unique evil on the planet. Israel could make peace if it wanted to, but it decides not to. Israel is, you know, just in every sense awful.
But in a way, Israel in that sense becomes, if you like, the thing about ourselves that we do not like, which is a typically kind of left radical view. In other words, Israel's an extension of America, and American imperialism is an extension of old British Empire imperialism and so on, but in the modern world, we identify with it in order to distance ourselves from it.
Yeah. In Britain, there's a tendency to understand Israel as our fault. We set it up. We allowed the Jews to go and oppress the Palestinians. It's a weird thing. You know, the Brits have a sort of anti-colonialist shame, really, which sometimes is tempting to put onto Israel.
When do you think Israel went from being something that you liked to something that you didn't like on the left?
Well, it's an astonishing journey, isn't it? And partly people got it wrong in the first place. So people had this lovely romantic love of Israel as the place of the oppressed and the place of the kibbutz and the place set up by the Labour Party. So they felt betrayed when Israel wasn't a light unto nations, and when Israel found itself in long and awful conflict with the Palestinians and the rest of it.
How in a sense, do you understand to yourself the progression of this type of thinking?
I think there was a moment in 2001. There was a huge UN conference in the newly liberated South Africa against racism. And at that conference, there was a concerted effort to say that the key racism on the very planet was Zionism. This happened the week before 9/11, and this also happened in the same year as the end of the peace process between the Israelis and the Palestinians. At that time, we also had the left's elision with Islamist politics, the politics which were considered to be sort of anti-imperialist of the Iranian state, and Muslim communities themselves who were put in a difficult position by 9/11 and by the way in which people were getting confused between totalitarian politics of Islamism on the one hand and being Muslim on the other. And we had the rise of the Respect Party in Britain. And George Galloway had always been on this wing of the Labour Party where he thought everything was trumped by this one split in the world between imperialism and anti-imperialism. And he went and, you know, hobnobbed with Saddam Hussein because he thought that Saddam was some sense part of the global left because he was fighting against the Americans. Then George Galloway formed this Respect Party, which brought in the cadres of the Socialist Workers' Party, which was the biggest Trotskyist party in Britain at that time, together with Galloway's politics on Israel and Zionism. And it went into the Muslim communities and kind of tried to use its rhetoric in order to appeal to a Muslim vote.
But why is that a problem for Jews? Why does that manifest itself in something that we call anti-Semitism? It might just be manifested in something that we say we don't like Israel.
Absolute hostility to Israel and Zionism and everything to do with it has become a sort of badge of acceptance, almost a sort of symbol of belonging in what I call the community of the good, right? When we have good people, people on the left, people in the unions, academics. So if you say, well, look, actually, I think Israel does this badly, but I think it does this well, then people begin to be suspicious and they begin to wonder if you're actually somehow representing Israel or imperialism or America or the nowadays the Tory party.
The major accusation that is made when instances of anti-Semitism come up and are pointed out, is particularly if they're widespread, is that there is a desire on the part of some of the makers, at least, to use the accusation of anti-Semitism to distract from the actions of the government of the State of Israel.
So one of the things, for example, I hope that the Labour inquiry is going to come out with, it's going to give examples. Some things have been anti-Semitic in this way. Other things are perfectly legitimate criticism. The problem is, when there's this insistence that because Labour is anti-racist, then you cannot have anti-Semitism in Labour. Everything is denied. The idea that the Jewish community, almost as a whole, is inventing anti-Semitism in order to back the Tories. I mean, why would the Jewish community want to back the Tories? There's no particular Jewish love for the Tories, but it ties in with the idea that Jews are somehow involved with being against the left. And this ties in, of course, to conspiratorial thinking and Jews as bankers and all of that.
But let's take an example, since it's been raised fairly recently, which is, it is claimed, it is in some sense peculiarly anti-Jewish to compare Jews with Nazis. But isn't the problem with this is that actually we tend to compare everybody we don't like to Nazis?
The key is in Jew baiting. It's done in order to get a rise.
But David, does that mean that your argument is that Jews are the one set of people in the world that you can't compare to being Nazis?
You're doing it for a bait. Secondly, I mean, of course, it needn't be even discussed that there's no comparison between what Israel does or has ever done and Nazism.
So it's the intent. So it's partly the intention which you're looking at there. But let's be clear here. When people think about anti-Semitism, they think about it in its most extreme form as being what the Nazis did. But even if they don't think about that, they think about anti-Semitism in terms of physical attacks upon Jews, yeah, upon attacks on Jewish property and so on. Yeah. Yet none of the people we're talking about have actually suggested or want that or so on.
There's a big, broad problem about the culture which has moved from the corners of the left to the mainstream. And what has happened in the last couple of weeks is that has bubbled up things that we can recognise. Right, so it's bubbled up Ken Livingstone's Holocaust inversion, and it's bubbled up somebody else saying the Jews are responsible for the slave trade. And then everybody says, oh, what we need to do is expel these anti-Semites. But that's not what's happening here. The problem is the culture. The problem is something bigger.
My thanks to David Hirsch, who's going to stay for the next part of the programme. Now in the briefing room are Owen Jones, Labour Party member, writer and broadcaster, and Kerry-Anne Mendoza, who gave up her career as a management consultant to become an activist in the Occupy movement and now writes and blogs extensively from the radical left and edits the Canary website. Owen Jones, you're a supporter of Jeremy Corbyn, a member of the Labour Party, and you've written very clearly that you do think there's a problem.
I do think, from my own experience, the majority of people on the left abhor anti-Semitism. But that doesn't mean that there isn't a problem that has to be dealt with. You know, I mean, for me, I'm somebody who passionately supports Palestinian justice and national self-determination. I want security for Jews and Palestinians alike based on a just peace which recognises the self-determination of both. And I abhor anti-Semitism. And I passionately want everybody on the left to have those views. I think they spring from the same place, which is a sense of repugnance when it comes to any form of prejudice or discrimination or oppression, and a belief in justice. So when I hear people, just to give the example David gives, you get this comparison sometimes, a deeply offensive comparison between the actions of the Israeli government and the Nazis. And I've heard that said by people who support Palestinian justice before. Now, I would say the occupation of Palestine is a brutal occupation in which thousands have died, and it is to be resisted in terms of building a peaceful settlement for both Arabs and Jews. But it isn't the same as the extermination by industrialised means of an entire people, millions of people. The reason that comparison is made is to cause deliberate offence, and it does no service whatsoever to the cause of Palestinian justice. And the final thing I'd say to that is people often say, why is Israel singled out? Personally, I'm far more vocal about Saudi Arabia. I think it represents a far greater threat to global peace than the Israeli government. What I would say, though, is, because people can say, what about North Korea? We're not arming North Korea. It's not funded. It's not supported by the West. If it was, I think people would take to the streets. And equally, I'm not saying apartheid South Africa and Israel are the same thing. They're not. But you could say in the 1970s, why are you singling out apartheid South Africa when totalitarian Stalinist regimes enveloped much of the world? Why aren't you talking about the Maoist Cultural Revolution? More about Franco's Spain? And the argument was this was a racialised form of oppression of one group over another, which had the support of the West. And I think certainly there are echoes. It's not the same thing. And I think that is why some people focus on it. But equally, I'd say supporters and opponents of the Israeli government, both of them, make Israel a priority in foreign policy.
The question I asked you originally was about how you characterised the problem.
And you've done some of that. For instance, one of the interesting things you said was you looked at the intention of the people making the Nazi comparisons and so on. Do you think there's also a problem with the delegitimization entirely of the word Zionist, the idea that the Jews should have a homeland and so on?
There's a very interesting piece by John Landsman, who is the chair of Momentum, which supports Jeremy Corbyn, and he was very much involved in running Jeremy Corbyn's whole leadership campaign. He is himself Jewish. And he's written an article saying that we should just move on from using that word Zionist because it's become a deeply unhelpful term which has become almost impossible to define. If I think of my Jewish friends, their opinions vary wildly on domestic issues and foreign policy issues. Most of them will support, all of them will support the existence of Israel. Many of them are deeply opposed to what the Israeli government is doing and passionately support a Palestinian state. Now, surely those of us who want Palestinian national self-determination should be standing in unity with them. And this is the point. Anti-Semitism is sometimes used to shut down criticism of Israel. There's no question of that whatsoever. But equally, many of my Jewish friends are scared about anti-Semitism. They think it's a genuine, real menace, and they are right to do so. When they hear Zionist bandied around, it makes them feel uncomfortable because they feel it's being used to target indiscriminately people, often who are Jewish. Now, I'm not saying that is always the case, but just the fact people feel that is enough to say that is not a helpful term, and people should instead focus on those who support the Israeli occupation and those who oppose it.
I want to come back in a moment to some of the places and some of the connections within the Labour Party can make this particularly problematic. But Kerry-Ann, as a left activist, I don't think you're actually affiliated to any particular political party. Your writings are very much on the sort of the resistance edge, the radical edge of politics. You've heard what David says. You've heard Owen's reaction to it. What do you say?
I'm sitting here as a gay granddaughter of a Caribbean immigrant who came to this country in the 1950s and married a white woman. I am very personally aware of the racism that existed in the left at that time and has continued to do so. Bus drivers in Bristol went on strike to try to prevent my grandfather and his peers from gaining jobs. So the idea that, you know, racism or prejudice towards any group suddenly just happened in the left, I think we would all be grossly naive and ignorant of history to argue that. On this specific issue, I think a lot of this comes down to nuance and intention. And I think it's very difficult when we are in a very kind of, as David says, emotionally charged situation to take the time to attempt to understand fully each other's position. And I have no truck with anti-Semitism. Half of my family are Jewish. It's something I've stood against historically and in the present day. First thing I wanted to touch on was the comparison, which I completely understand why it's offensive, the comparison of Israel to Nazism or the atrocities of the Third Reich. I said, well, what evidence is there for that? And so, well, what other state in the world do I know of in the present day has been behind the forced sterilisation of Jewish women? That would be Israel. It was applying Depo Provera, long-term contraceptive injections, to Ethiopian Jewish women. I think that's an anti-Semitic act. I think it has horrific echoes of some of the atrocities, not all of them, some of the atrocities perpetrated by the Third Reich. And I think it's right to call that out. I would call that out in any state, anywhere in the world, where Jewish women or any other group of women were subject to forcible sterilisation to prevent some sort of racial dilution, which was the theory behind that process. Do I think it's helpful for people to go around willy-nilly attempting to bait Jewish people by calling them Nazis? Absolutely not. But do I think there is some evidential case for saying there are echoes here of some of the worst behaviour that we have committed in Europe? Yes, I do. And actually, that was an opinion that was actually given to me originally by a Jewish Israeli. I was reporting from Gaza on the ground during Operation Protective Edge. I was there and witnessing it. Do I think it's wholly comparable? No, but I don't think any situation is. But to dismiss out of hand those concerns as intrinsically anti-Semitic, I would disagree with.
David, how do you respond to that?
Well, I think we need to talk about what the Nazis did. The Nazis created a racial categorization of human beings. They created an industrial network in order to round up, identify and gas and murder all of the Jews of Europe. Now, Kerry-Anne's story about one incident in which some people were given long-term contraception is a really good example of how particular incidents are used to kind of demonise Israel. The claim that there was a campaign to stop black people from breeding in Israel is just appalling, actually. It's not true, when in fact black people have been brought and rescued and brought to Israel and are part of Israeli society, are half of Israeli society.
But they are not bought and rescued by Israel. They have been treated abysmally.
I've stood with a friend whose relatives, 40 of their relatives, were shot dead in the forests of Latvia, and I stood at the railway tracks where people were carted off and exterminated. And it just can't be compared. Some of these people are the grandchildren of Holocaust survivors, and to tell them that basically they're supporting the equivalent of the regime that murdered their relatives, it's just wrong. It drives people away.
And you talked about the intention earlier. Kerry-Anne, can I move this on slightly to the question of the characterisation of Zionism per se? Do you and the people who agree with you and who enjoy your blog and so on, I'm not saying that they all have the same view, but broadly some of you, do they accept the idea that there can be such a thing as a good Zionism? Can Zionism ever be anything other than racism and appalling?
I'm not for a theocratic or ethnically pure state anywhere in the world. I oppose Saudi Arabia on that basis. I oppose the style of politics put forward by the likes of Ted Cruz and Donald Trump in the United States and the sort of Christian right in the United States. That's my position. I don't believe there should be an Israeli state on the terms that Zionism puts forward, which is a Jewish state on that particular patch of land. I oppose any theocracy, so I think,
yeah,
I think
Israel's
my point
not,
is clear.
Israel's not a theocracy because the rabbinate doesn't actually run Israel in the same way that, say, the Supreme Council runs Iran.
It doesn't, but to identify itself as the Jewish state, to have the Star of David on a flag, to operate in the way it does, and the way that somebody put it to me, which is, as a black woman, when you were standing against South African apartheid, would you have advocated a solution to South African apartheid, essentially a colonial project, to say that the white people, the sort of British colonialists, should seize, you know, and keep Johannesburg and elsewhere,
sure,
and that black people should just be able to govern the Bantustans?
Sure, Kerry-Anne.
I would have rightly opposed that.
This is what I was trying to get down to, which is essentially the view that you hold, you didn't used to hold it, and is a big view on the Labour, in the Left Labour Party now, some people would say, which it didn't used to be, is that the project itself is wrong.
Yeah.
Now, Owen, isn't that actually one of the problems at the base of this, which is that the opinion has shifted on the left from a toleration of the idea of a Jewish state to one that says, actually, we'd rather it didn't exist, thank you very much. And the knock-on problem of that is that most Jews believe it should.
People often generalise and say the left thinks this and the left thinks that. I've never known the left to have a entirely homogenous or cohesive view on anything, but I think, from my experience, most would support a two-state solution where you have a viable Palestinian state that isn't a Bantustan, which is basically so much of its land has been confiscated and is so subordinate to Israel that it doesn't function as an effective independent state. Another solution is where you have a federal solution, whatever you want to call it. And I think myself what the left has to do, above all else, because the only way the situation in the Middle East in terms of Palestine and Israel is to be resolved, is where both Jews and Palestinians feel secure and safe. And that means building a broad coalition. And that includes in Britain between progressive Jews who abhor what the Israeli government is doing and people like myself who feel the same.
I know you don't like the word, but that means that part of that coalition has got to be with people who profess as Zionists.
Yes, of course. Mm. Yes,
now,
definitely.
I read the literature and on a significant section of the left, the word Zionist is simply a dirty word.
I think it has become a problematic term. And there was no question at all that people who are Jewish in this country now feel fearful to some degree of the left. And that is unacceptable. There would not be a modern left without Jewish people. And if they feel uncomfortable with that word Zionist, if they feel uncomfortable with some of that rhetoric, then it is my responsibility to speak out. You know, we think of it just as neo-Nazi skinheads often. But in the 19th century, the German socialist August Bebel warned that anti-Semitism was the socialism of fools, in quotes, because that rhetoric of Jewish bankers and financiers was one that existed then. So it's a real problem that does exist. And my view is that there has to be a relentless, remorseless attack on all forms of anti-Semitic tropes, whether it be people talking about the Jewish lobby, the Zionist lobby, because I often think those two terms are treated interchangeably. Instead, people need to use precise language, which means opposing the Israeli occupation of Palestine.
That's your view, and that's the thing that you think people should do. We're also
and lots
talking
on the left believe that, though. I'm not alone, from alone, and that view has to be expressed more forcefully.
I'm not in a position to again say you own. You talk to more of the people on the left than you do, but I have to say I hear that view myself perilously little. What I much more often hear, seem to encounter, is a kind of, and David referred to it earlier, is a kind of cloth-earedness when it comes to the tropes. So let's talk about those a little bit. The great anti-Semitic tropes are held to be about Jews exercising shadowy influence and power by virtue of their tribalism, by virtue of their cunning, and by virtue of their money. And there are things which are said, sometimes, are there not, about Israeli lobbies or Zionist lobbies, Zionist is now a term of art, which, don't you feel, Kerry-Anne, are the same things that people used to say with the word Jewish instead of Zionist?
My wife was in school and told by her teacher, "Aren't you lucky you're Jewish? Good at business." You know, this is a lifetime burden that she has borne and which is unacceptable to me. But is there a Zionist lobby, a pro-Israel lobby, a group of people with lots of money who spend that money in terms of promoting propaganda that would support vis-a-vis of Israel-Palestine?
Yeah,
that does exist. AIPAC in the United States. So that does exist. But I do think, and it is a serious point that I don't even wish to oppose. I think there is a serious problem there with people bring their prejudice to that. And they say, this isn't about Israel and Palestine. It isn't about this specific incident. This is typical of this sinister cabal of Jewish people who go around, you know, using their money to exert influence and commit these crimes. And I would absolutely go, I've got absolutely no argument with that. And I do think that happens.
There's a problem with that, which is that people on the left, in the left, I'm a sociology teacher. Owen is well known for being on the left and a supporter of the left. We get accused of being part of a Zionist lobby. So what happens, there's a slippage, and I could trace the slippage in lots of things you've said, but there's a slippage from saying, yes, there are people who lobby for Israel. Yes,
there are people who lobby for China, there are people who lobby for Saudi Arabia.
There are people who lobby for Israel, but there's a slippage into huge financial power and global power, and there's a slippage from people who lobby for Israel to the Israel lobby. The Israel lobby has its grips on the Western world, so they use an anti-racist kind of form to articulate anti-Semitic conspiracy theory. And there's a lot of that going on at the moment.
Don't you suspect that at the end of all this, wherever all this has come from, that if somehow or other everybody was suddenly to talk happy and the Israeli Prime Minister was going to shake hands with Mahmoud Abbas and, you know, there was going to be a kind of a moderate wing split away from Hamas, if one can imagine such a thing and so on. But anyway, there's some kind of agreement. Don't you think that an awful lot of this would just simply die away?
Anti-Semitism predates, as we know, the existence of Israel by millennia. No, of course not. Anti-Semitism has existed in Europe for at least 2,000 years, manifested itself in pogroms, blood libel, murder, expulsions, and culminating, of course, in the Shoah, the attempt to exterminate the Jewish people. All of these predate the existence of Israel. The idea, if there was a settlement, anti-Semitism would all disappear, is obviously a total nonsense. What I'm saying is, I'm saying that the only way that the left will come to the positions that I want is if people like me speak out passionately and argue this case, which is to take anti-Semitism seriously while supporting a peaceful resolution of the occupation of Palestine. These are not either or, and if we did have more voices, and there are those voices out there and they're not listened to enough, then I think we would have both of those objectives.
How did I know somehow, I mean, that you'd end up with the last word? That's it for this week. If you enjoyed this programme and you want to subscribe to our podcast, just search for The Briefing Room. For now, it's time to clean the whiteboards, put the flip charts away to thank David Hirsch, Owen Jones and Kerry-Anne Mendoza, and to leave the briefing room until this time next week.
Thanks for listening to The Briefing Room from BBC Radio 4. This edition was produced by Joe Kent and Kirstine Knight. The editor is Innes Bowen and the presenter is David Aronovich. If you enjoyed what you've heard, we'll be back next week. And why not check out The Inquiry, another podcast from the BBC.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Hello. It's Ray Winstone. I'm here to tell you about my podcast on BBC Radio 4, History's Toughest Heroes. I've got stories about the pioneers, the rebels, the outcasts who define tough.
And that was the first time that anybody ever ran a car up that fast with no tires on. It almost feels like your eyeballs are going to come out of your head.
Tough enough for you? Subscribe to History's Toughest Heroes wherever you get your podcast.